Running a business is really challenging on so many fronts, not the least of which is that you have to put your finances at risk to fund your business. That is why it makes so much sense to proactively manage your risk, reduce uncertainty, and protect the livelihood of your business wherever possible. Business insurance is one of those areas that's not often talked about. There are plenty of courses on social media marketing, leadership, and even financial literacy, but surprisingly very few on how to protect the key assets that you need to stay in business, deal with disasters, whether they're man-made or natural, and protect the human beings that you interact with every single day in your business. Think about how you would manage if your stock or your employees, suppliers, equipment, or even your place of business was badly damaged and destroyed. Would you be able to continue? You know, could you recover financially based on the savings that you have on hand right now? Insurance, it's really about peace of mind. However, you have to know what to insure, and you also have to know how much to insure it for in order for it to be effective. That is where it makes sense to actually speak to somebody that you know you can trust. I'm really excited to bring Lisa Carter onto the program today. I recently got introduced to her through somebody that I trust very much. Lisa is an award-winning insurance advisor. She's got over 25 years of experience in the industry. She, you know, following an 11-year career with a very recognizable international insurance broking firm, she identified a market gap. And she stepped away to start her own business, which is called Clear Insurance, in about 2010. Lisa is a master at building long-term client relationships. That's basically what it comes down to. She specializes in custom insurance and risk programs for really complicated and hard-to-place accounts, which, as you guys are about to find, is a growing segment of the market. She's also delivered some really unique solutions for the construction, hospitality, medical, and even tech startup industries. And I know that she has plenty of really powerful stories that she's going to share with us today. Welcome to the program, Lisa. I'm excited to speak with you.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, I want to start off by just talking generally about the insurance market, if that's okay with you. You know, we've witnessed kind of like a once-in-a-lifetime event with this COVID-19, right? Businesses were shut down. Movements were restricted, not just of people, but also goods and services. Leases were put on hold, all that sort of stuff. How has this impacted the industry and the conditions that most businesses right now face in terms of actually securing cover?
Right. Well, it's interesting. The insurance market was going through a hard market cycle anyhow, prior to COVID. So what that effectively means is that insurance companies' profitability was down due to a number of factors such as low interest rates. So insurers weren't making money off their investments, which they usually use to offset premium pricing. So they've had a number of factors against them prior to COVID, and COVID just sort of was the icing on the cake, if you will, and has absolutely now contributed to the already hard market conditions in the insurance market. So we're seeing a lot of insurers restricting cover and increasing premiums. Some insurers are in fact withdrawing altogether from offering cover to certain occupations. So the occupations or the industries that we've seen impacted the most are hospitality or businesses that have had direct revenue impact or lack of revenue due to COVID. So clubs and pubs and restaurants and so on that have had to shut down and effectively lose that cash flow.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what happens with hospitality type businesses that are unable to secure cover? I mean, how do they come out of something like the pandemic when they have, because it's not easy to make money in a hospitality business, right? Margins are very, very tight.
That's
so
right.
Now, if on top of it all, you have no way to secure cover, how are they going to make a go of it?
Oh, look, it's really quite tough. I have a have just recently had an experience with a very long-term client of mine that I've serviced for over 15 years, a large venue, and we were unable to secure property insurance for them. The risk in that is under insurance, in that then potentially the client isn't buying the right level of cover that they need, but it's better that they buy something rather than nothing. So it really comes down to the business owner's own decision-making as to whether they believe they can continue to operate the business with either no insurance or inadequate insurance or half the insurance, or if they have to make the ultimately tough decision of not continuing to trade.
Yeah, fair enough. In your professional opinion, do you think that there might be a bit of an epidemic now of underinsurance? And if so, are there specific areas of risk that you think or suspect are the least protected?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, this has always been an issue in my 25 years as an insurance broker. Every new client that I engage with, I typically find that they are underinsured when it comes to business interruption insurance, and sometimes public liability insurance. So business interruption insurance is triggered when you have a damage at your property. So if you have a property damage loss caused by fire, storm, so on, and then your business can't trade and it loses profits, that is a business interruption loss. And public liability, generally the minimum limit should be $20 million for any business, and we don't see it too much more anymore, but $10 million is simply not enough nowadays.
With the business interruption insurance, do you have any specific cases of clients that you dealt with that were underinsured that you can share?
Well, how about I tell a good news story instead?
Sure.
I had a long-term client that was a printing company, and so they had big Heidelberg printing presses and dies and molds and all of the bits and pieces that they used to print printed paper and stock for their customers. They had a big flood, and we had full flood cover for them. The whole ground floor of their business had a meter of salty water go through the premises. It completely destroyed their printing press and all of their molds and dies and so on. And we had them insured for not only full flood cover, but they had full business interruption insurance covering their full gross profit values, including 100% wages. So they hadn't taken any deductions out of their gross profit figure.
Yes.
And they had an extended 18-month indemnity period. So that meant that they had 18 months worth of cover from the date that the flood occurred. And they had a fantastic claim experience. They actually completely changed their business, didn't replace the Heidelberg press. They went into digital print. So this was about 10 years ago now. So they went into digital print and completely pivoted their business and came out of that loss, major loss event, stronger than ever, because they had the right, not only flood insurance, but the right business interruption insurance.
Fair enough. And no doubt they would have gone under if they hadn't have had the insurance because, you know, in my experience, most businesses have about 16 days worth of cash reserves, and that's not going to cover a complete flood destruction that wrecks all of your equipment.
100%. Yeah, that's exactly right. And that is a good, that's a question that I do ask new clients that come to us. I ask, well, that's wonderful that you have no debt and that you own all of your properties, but what are your cash reserves? And if you have a fire at your premises, how long can you continue to trade with your own money eating away into your own capital that you've worked so hard to build? Will the bank lend you money when you've got a damaged building? Probably not. So you can't go to the bank and ask for cash flow. So let's look at insuring the right amount of business interruption for your business to ensure that that cash flow is protected at claim time and you're not scrambling trying to sell assets or offload other properties in order to prop up your main premises and your main source of income.
Yeah, that makes sense. Are there any increased risk management measures that are now required by the insurers in order to actually secure cover?
Yes, absolutely. So probably the biggest change we're seeing is in the cyber insurance space. Insurers are now requiring or demanding business owners take their cyber risk very seriously and have adequate protection in place and risk management strategies in place around cyber risk. So doing regular penetration audits and cyber audits, password protection, firewalls, dual passwords, dual sign-offs on funds transfers, two-factor authentication, all of those pretty critical cyber protection measures to protect business from cyber loss.
Is it mostly related to businesses that are actually transacting, meaning selling goods online? Are you seeing this risk management appetite with the insurers also translating into more traditional businesses who still have risk exposures online?
So the way I like to explain cyber risk and cyber insurance is it's effectively a fire policy for your data. So if your business has an internet connection, is using the internet and storing data, then you're at risk. So it doesn't matter if you're an online retailer or a manufacturing company that has a small website, but you're using software to operate your machinery and produce your products, then you have just as much cyber risk as an online retailer. The manufacturer and the online retailer are both equally exposed to cyber risk. So cyber risk can mean cyber criminals hacking into your software systems and shutting down your machines, and then your business can't operate and you can't produce your product, and therefore you can't trade, and therefore you lose income. So that's what a cyber insurance policy would protect you against.
Fair enough. Plus it's the customer data as well.
Yeah, so there's legislation now that if your company is turning over more than $3 million and you're storing personal or sensitive information, and that's very broad, the definition of sensitive data, if you're storing that data and you have a breach, you need to report it to the government now, and you can be at risk as a director for prosecution for failing to report. So that $3 million turnover cap isn't applicable, by the way. So you could be only a small business turning over $500,000, but you're storing personal data of your customers, you still fall under that legislation. So the risk to company directors and business owners is high now around managing other people's data and being responsible for it.
I don't know if you experience this or not, but I think that there's this general feeling that if somebody gets into your online banking, that you can just go to your bank and your bank's going to help you recover those losses. But that's not the case, is it?
No, not at all. And look, the banks, I think, personally do a fantastic job on helping businesses manage their cyber risk. But that's why when you go through the exercise of filling in a cyber insurance proposal forms, the questions that are asked are around dual sign-off authority and who can do funds transfer. Do you have two sets of eyes looking at a transfer before it's authorized? Can anyone go into your bank account and change suppliers' bank account details without somebody else signing off on that change? So there's many risk management tools that can be put in place that successfully prevent these sorts of social engineering fraud losses from occurring. And I guess the banks do try to educate their customers, and you'll see all of the banks regularly have customer information sessions and forums, and you see emails and information going out. It's just a matter of business owners actually taking the time to take that seriously, read the risk management tips, and then implement them into their business.
Times have changed. I want to come back because you touched on this idea of management risk, and I really want to dig down on it, because I think that there might be a perception that management risk only applies to big businesses, right? Mm. Do small businesses need management liability insurance? And if so, can you take us through why that is?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're a PTY LTD company and you're a director of a company, then you're at risk for the decisions that you make in your business. You've also got staff in your business. So say you might have an office manager or a site manager or a bookkeeper or a finance person who's helping you run the finances of the business. All of those people are making decisions in your business that can potentially cause a loss to another party, to a third party. So examples of people that could be could suffer a loss would be suppliers or creditors or government agencies, anyone that your business interacts with that could potentially suffer a financial loss as a result of what decisions have been made in the operations of your business. So I can give you a couple of claims examples around directors and officers liability that one of our insurer partners have paid out, and these are real life claims examples where an employee in a construction company sent an email to a co-worker making statements about one of their suppliers, which was a defamatory statement, and somehow the supplier found out about this email between the employees, and they sued the company for defamation, but they also sued the author of the email. So the author of the email was the employee of the business. So that employee, just simply by having a job at the business, unwittingly is at risk by making a defamatory comment against a supplier of their employer. So that claim ended up getting paid out for $60,000 in legal fees and defense costs. But
thank goodness the business was covered, because the problem is, it's one thing for you as a director to know that you could be liable, but it's quite another to be held liable for statements made by people who are working for you on behalf of the business, right?
That's right, exactly. So it's just, we're just in a litigious environment, society now, I guess, and this is where business owners need to be vigilant on managing the activities and decision making that their staff are undertaking. So you might think, I'm the owner of the business, the buck stops with me, but when you're employing staff and even consultants or subcontractors who are representing your business, any actions or decisions that they take as individuals, they're at risk too. So by buying a management liability insurance policy for the business, then you can protect not just yourself but your staff and your subcontractors as well. So in big business, in the corporate end of town, directors and officers liability insurance is expected. You won't have anyone sit on the board of a big company if they don't hold directors and officers liability insurance, because those directors know that any decisions they make in the business could affect them personally, individually.
I know for a fact that when you look at the statistics, cyber insurance and management liability insurance are the two kind of most overlooked areas. So I highly recommend that if people are listening to this right now and they are underinsured, that they reach out and contact you to talk about this and to talk through. Maybe they need a diagnostic of where they really sit in the business and where the holes are. If they need to get in touch with you, Lisa, how do they go about doing that?
Well, I'm happy to connect with people via LinkedIn or simply our Contact Us page on the Clear Insurance website.
Fair enough. And I promise, as always, to put those details in the show notes so that make it easy for people to know what the best and easiest ways to get in contact with you. Thank you so much for sharing some really good examples, because I think, you know, it's easy to think about insurance as a piece of paper and something that you've got in your business. But at a very base level, what it really comes down to is the relationships that are in place and the protections that you have in place that keep your business afloat. These are really important questions, and there aren't a lot of courses out there to help educate small business owners about what these risks really are. So thank you for coming on and giving a broad brush overview of, you know, where the risks might be and some questions that people need to be asking themselves to think about what the protections are. So thank you so much for that.
Happy to help. Thanks for inviting me to talk today.